something we have all unwillingly become well-versed in, the global supply chain, where once upon a time it was just in the background, you know, whirring like a well-oiled machine. Well, it has not lived up to the stresses of modern-day pandemic realities. So how can blockchain step in? We're about to find out. Welcome to Word on the Block, the series that takes a deeper dive into blockchain and all the emerging technologies that shape our world at the intersection of business, politics, and economy. It's what we cover right here on Forecast News. I'm Editor-in-Chief Angie Lau. Well, experts around the world warn industries must gear up for what they're calling a sustained supply chain crisis. The digitized economy is creating higher demands more than ever before in shipping, and industries are struggling to keep up. So, what are some technology-driven solutions that we may see in coming months? Well, SyncFab connects OEM part buyers, that's original equipment manufacturer that actually produces the parts, and the manufacturers themselves that need those parts for the goods that you and I buy through blockchain technology. And today we're joined by their chief product officer, Dennis Delgado, to explore how blockchain can smooth out potentially and fix even the global supply chain. That is a big order, Dennis. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Angie. Yeah, no, I'm excited to be here and definitely a lot to talk about.
Well, as chief product officer, as co-founder of SyncFab, let's talk about first what SyncFab does and where we find ourselves currently. So supply chain, this was something that you thought early on to marry with blockchain.
Correct. Yeah. So in about 2018 is when we first delve into the blockchain world and started building applications utilizing blockchain. Our company itself has always been focused on supply chain. How can we connect vendors or suppliers to companies to make things and just make that experience much easier than it was? So when we came into the space, we saw a big opportunity in how blockchain can help move some of that information between those vendors and the companies that make the products that we use today.
And so fast forward a couple of years later, and then the pandemic hits. And what is happening right now with the global supply chain? What is going on?
Well, that's a big question to answer. I think we're all trying to figure that out together, Angie. So there's a lot happening in terms of supply, as we know, is unprecedented volumes going on with demand currently. We can't keep up with the amount of things that need to be produced. Ourselves, you know, the industries that we focus in are primarily in aerospace and automotive and defense. But even in those industries, we're seeing a lot of the same impacts of just things such as materials that need to be produced and procured in order to make the items that go into some of the consumer products or even some of the OEM products that we deal with. But right now, yeah, there's a huge backlog in the industry.
And what people are experiencing for really the first time that they haven't experienced in a long time is bottlenecks. I want some, you know, this entire consumer class, and I think the manufacturing world and the global supply chain world has trained us to get things when we expect to get them. And sometimes it's as quick as tomorrow or 48 hours from now or a week from now. And suddenly those goods are 3 months from now, potentially 6 months from now. And it's jamming up industries, meaning that if the equipment or the supplies that are needed for construction, for automotive or appliances or any of the things that require supply chain frictionless and seamless experience, suddenly all of those industries are also hamstrung.
Correct. And I think, you know, we've been brought up in this Amazon Prime 2-day shipping world where we want everything tomorrow or the next day. And realities are, you know, things take time to make and produce. You can only have so much supply ready at hand to be able to ship out at a time's notice. And what we're seeing is how can we increase some of that almost preactive analytics and preactive supply shortages to figure out what we need before the shortages happen. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there that we're seeing in blockchain, as well as other new technologies like machine learning and artificial intelligence, where it can help us, you know, figure out those data points, those connections to better prepare these companies for when those shortages are going to happen. So they can think about it months ahead to prevent that from happening when it comes down the pipe.
So a lot of people who are watching are going to be wondering, how does blockchain fix this? Well, how does blockchain fix this?
Totally. Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think to put it in a simple way, what we've kind of seen the advantages of blockchain really doing is connecting these different companies together on a data level. What we found out through our experience working with different OEMs and different industries over time is that a lot of these organizations usually work in a very independent and siloed environment. And what I mean by that is that they're very closed up and preventative of sharing information with one another. So I might have a requirement of needing some, say, material for some products down the line, but I don't really know which companies have that material at hand at a ready's notice. And I think where we see blockchain being able to add some advantages here is really create that kind of trust layer between these entities to be able to share that information with one another and securely, where it's currently not really happening in an efficient way.
So how do we create those efficiencies then?
Yeah, so I think this is really an opportunity for technology to kind of step up and figure out how to open up that data infrastructure. You know, we've been working with several companies to this day to figure that out. How do we connect their different vendor networks into a blockchain system so they can better understand who and what their vendors have at all times so they can procure the right things that they need in a timely fashion? I think that's going to really speed up some of this supply chain woes that we're facing of demand outpacing the supply that we weren't ready for.
As I was doing a little bit of homework before our conversation, I noted a presentation you guys did 3 years ago, warning of almost this moment where, you know, we're in the good days of supply chain right now. This was 3 years ago. Now is actually the time to think about how we can update, to disrupt, and improve the system for a day that could come when we need it. Whose crystal ball were you gazing into, and can I borrow it, number one? And number two, were you successful? With the people that you've worked with early on, were they able to navigate a little bit better what currently everybody else is experiencing right now?
Yeah, no, great. Thanks for bringing that up. Definitely, you know, we saw this impact coming, I think, from a lot of factors. One, you know, our CEO came from a manufacturing background, primarily abroad, and seeing the demand increase there and how that can similarly happen here in the U.S. in due time. And now we're seeing it too with the new infrastructure bill that was just passed and the amount of manufacturing that we want to have happen in the U.S., especially in the coming years. And we'll see that this is only going to get increasingly worse in terms of the amount of demand that's needed going forward. So in terms of the companies that we worked with early on, you know, yes, they were able to kind of understand what their supply chain had to offer in a much deeper level. I think you'd be surprised the amount of companies and vendors that we work with that are still hesitant to adopt new technologies. So this was really a kind of step towards digitizing a lot of their efforts. You know, many of the organizations that we worked with in the past were still very much paper-based, you know, papered invoices, papered drawing information, assemblies information, all that is still very manual. So I think with a lot of the early organizations that we brought on was really how do we digitize a lot of that manual paperwork that has to get processed and then inputted into our blockchain system, which definitely helped smooth a lot of the kind of day-to-day manual processes that have to go on.
You know, we've often talked about that, and I think a lot of people are aware of it if they've, you know, spent some time with us in our show, is that, you know, especially in supply chain, even shipping industry, when you have reams and reams and cases and boxes of paper documents that actually have to be signed, you know, processed versus things that can happen in a more seamless fashion digitally. Where are we in terms of where we've been and where we should be going in the industry? Where are we currently in the digital transformation / adoption phase for supply chain?
Yeah, so I would say we're still very early on, unfortunately. I wish we were a little bit further along than we currently are. I mean, we do have some legacy software systems that are in place that do help with some of these. You know, you think of your large organizations like Oracle and SAP, they have some, you know, digital softwares that help with logistics and shipping and things like that. But in terms of how do you spread some of those software technologies to not just the top level companies who can afford them, but also, you know, the vendors and the different manufacturers that are producing in the supply chain and the shipping organizations, you know, that's the bigger effort, right? That's, you know, a separate conversation of getting them to understand the greater digital transformation that needs to happen and getting them to adopt it and kind of replace some of the traditional systems that they might have, which is honestly the hardest part is just kind of showing the advantages there with the new system and then saying, okay, you know, we're not adding an additional layer to your normal day to day and trying to make it more difficult, but we're trying to add it and replace it with this system that will cause, you know, a much more streamlined experience.
What is the disconnect, you think? And I know a Deloitte research survey back in 2018 that looked at digital transformation adoption across enterprises. Startups, it's totally fine. It's the enterprises that really were concerned with implementation. 74% of those respondents say they see a compelling business case, but they don't see how it can fit into their existing system. There's regulatory concerns, there are security threats, lack of skills, understanding. We understand those things, you know, which is why people spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. What is the hurdle that still needs to happen in this day and age, 3 years on? Why is still this a sticky point for a lot of enterprises?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, we've worked with, you know, several larger OEMs at this point that, you know, vary in terms of their processes and systems that they have in place. I think one of the things that we've seen with some of the newer companies that we work with, say, you know, some of the space organizations that have used us, they're more open to some of the change that's occurring in the industry and some of the digital tools that are available now and how they can adopt them, maybe run smaller kind of case studies or use cases with certain processes within their supply chain to see how adoption could work. But when you get into some of the larger organizations that, you know, have been around for decades, you know, they have entrenched systems in place that, you know, can vary from department to department that we've seen. You know, different departments can be running different software systems. Different organizations within the company might not necessarily be talking with one another. So it's a much more larger initiative that has to occur. And what we found, it really starts not necessarily from the top down. It really starts from the bottom up of these different departments working with the actual employees on the ground to understand their processes and see how these types of software solutions can help them.
So if you're an executive at one of these more traditional legacy companies, what's the takeaway here? You should be talking to your junior staff.
Junior. I mean, not even necessarily junior, but just more so the, you know, staff on the ground that are running the day-to-day operations, they're the ones that are going to be using these software solutions on a daily basis. So understanding their pain points and their needs of what, you know, the current system in place is really where they're going to be the stakeholders that drive that change within the company. And that's what we're really seeing, is that you can't have necessarily the CEO come in and say, hey, here's this new technology that we're going to start using today, figure it out. It's just not how it works, unfortunately. You have to work with the individuals that are running the day-to-day operations to figure out how the software can really benefit them.
It brings us to a broader situation right now that we're seeing across the board, which is manufacturing output. In the U.S. has surged 1.2% in October. Right now, we're speaking the end of 2021 for our future audience. But essentially, surging 1.2% in October, it's the highest level since March 2019, after falling 0.7% in September, the month before. So there's quite a large jump here. And more economists polled forecast that manufacturing production is expected to rise by close to another 1%. So if what we're experiencing right now with the growth that we already have and not being able to keep up and defining it and characterizing it as a supply chain crisis, what's going to happen when manufacturing output continues to grow and the stress on the system continues to build?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, that's one thing that we definitely did not see a slowdown on during the pandemic, was just U.S. manufacturing as a whole. It kept running along at full steam, and if anything, it increased during the COVID times, because people understood the need to have local manufacturing when you couldn't ship abroad, or couldn't factories abroad were shut down. So how do you kind of go through those supply chain woes that can occur during a pandemic? And I think that's what we saw during that time, but also now we're thinking ahead of how can we make sure that doesn't happen again. And I think I saw this morning, actually, Kamala Harris tweeted about the infrastructure law and building our electric vehicles here in the U.S. going forward, including some of the battery and parts components, which is going to be a huge endeavor. And that's only going to further increase our manufacturing output that's required here in the U.S. So I think there's definitely, for the at least from what I can see, manufacturing is not going to come down anytime soon. So how do we provide the tools and support for that vendor network and that supplier network is what we're definitely interested in, seeing how we can utilize some of the blockchain incentive models. I know with one of our partner organizations, SmartMFG Tech, they have a crypto token that we're utilizing to see how we can incentivize the vendors that work with us to provide quotes within the system, to go ahead and place purchase orders, use that as a mechanism for payment potentially, and other features that can possibly bring into increase output with the manufacturers that we work with.
Okay, I want to dive into this because this is the exciting part of this conversation, which is disruptive technology. How do we bring in the incentivization that we see baked into tokenomics and streamline what is essentially a disincentivized supply chain? We're hearing this. We're hearing the great retirement, you know, people who are just peacing out on their jobs because they can get a better opportunity elsewhere, and or they're completely stressed out by a system that they don't believe in supporting anymore, et cetera, et cetera. I'm curious how you're thinking about creating a new layer of incentivization through tokens that could help supply chain.
Definitely. Well, there's a bunch of different use cases that we have for the token, but I think there's a couple things first before we get there that we need to address. You know, thing with supply chain manufacturing, as you said, it is a legacy industry that has kind of supported America, kind of brought it to where it's been. But a lot of the individuals that work with the supply chain are either retiring or kind of growing out of it. And we've seen businesses shut down for that reason. So I think one part of it is how do we increase employment in manufacturing, in a way make manufacturing cool again for a younger demographic to be interested in that industry that is actually very competitive in pay and benefits and has a huge demand right now for a need for employees to come into these facilities to help produce the parts that, you know, a lot of these newer companies are requiring, as well as some of the older ones. So I think one aspect of to go along with that is, yeah, you know, there are a lot of pro and benefits for tokenomics, and we see that in supply chains for incentivizing a legacy industry that normally doesn't get compensated for a lot of time spent on things such as quoting jobs is one huge issue that we've seen. You know, we see vendors that might spend a full day trying to quote out a potential order with no guarantee that they're going to win that order. You know, that's employee time that has to go spent quoting out that job, calling up different vendors to figure out pricing, and submitting that bid with no guarantee of payment. So where that can be, that time can be spent elsewhere. So what we're seeing is, how can we provide an incentive layer with a token or with our smart MFG tech partners to essentially reward them for that time spent quoting jobs. And another area as well is the receiving of final parts and goods, you know, for timely response times, keeping OEMs up to date, shipping things on time, areas like that where we normally don't think would necessarily be paid or rewarded for. We disagree. We think there's a lot of opportunity there that these blockchain tokenomics can bring. And with the added layer of you know, getting a newer generation interested in manufacturing again.
What part of that conversation now includes metaverse and NFTs and DeFi?
Yeah, so the whole metaverse NFT craze, I think we all are aware of at this point, at least a good majority have heard that buzz term thrown around. So in SceneFab itself, we first got into NFTs back in 2017, 2018. And we were kind of interested on the IP protection side, looking at the industries that we work with, the organizations, you know, in aerospace and defense. You know, IP is a very sensitive topic, and the ownership of that IP and the kind of parts information that gets exchanged between vendors and OEMs. You know, how can you protect that? So that's where we were investigating and developed our own NFT within the platform. But we've since seen it move to a more consumer-facing model, where, you know, we saw the kind of art industry take off with it and really use NFTs in a different way that wasn't before. And I think honestly, NFTs right now are still very early in kind of what they can do. I think there's still a lot more new and cooler technologies that can be wrapped with NFTs to make them a much more usable and viable technology for other industries outside of just, I think, mostly art right now is kind of the biggest one. And that's where we see it for aerospace and defense and automotive as more of a tool for IP protection. And soon, I think even exchanging certain files and information with one another, being able to track that in a more secure way.
And as we go into 2022, what would you say was the most significant development in blockchain in 2021 this year? And where do you think it's going to go? What is your one prediction for where things are going to go in your industry, in your, you know, in that crystal ball of yours, which we know was pretty powerful for 2022?
Yeah, I think we're going to see an explosion of new blockchains coming. I think right now we have kind of the big three or big five that everybody that's gotten into blockchains kind of aware of, you know, your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, and those use their own blockchains. Now, I think we're seeing now a need for different blockchains for specialized industries. And I think we're going to see more of those come, especially outside of just, you know, metaverse and art and technology. We're going to see it going into more traditional avenues of logistics, manufacturing is kind of what we're interested in, and seeing how maybe a different blockchain can be utilized more efficiently for that. But I think that's what we're going to see is an increase on newer, more efficient blockchains that can help with some of the different industry pain points that we're seeing.
Do you think there will still be a speculative nature where people will want to participate?
I think with any new technology, there's always a speculative nature. You know, you think when the web boom of the late 90s and to early 2000s of all the different web companies that were popping up, you know, it's kind of the Wild West at first. And then soon, once the legitimate use cases come out of it and ones with businesses that are able to operate, I think there'll be a shakeout, and you'll see some of the true players that are accomplishing real everyday, you know, use cases that can be accomplished. But yeah, I think for a little bit longer, it's going to be that way. It's going to be a lot of people just, you know, trying to take advantage of a new technology, and might not be right for everyone, but I think it's here to stay. When we're seeing that with some of the older blockchains that have been around, and you know, larger companies getting behind them to figure out how to incorporate those technologies, which is definitely different from when we started. You know, we were knocking on doors and getting turned around left and right. Nobody wanted to touch blockchain. But now, you know, we go to different organizations and startups that, you know, come to us because we are doing supply chain with blockchain, and they want to understand how that can be incorporated into their business.
What do you think is the biggest lesson that you've learned on behalf of supply chain participants everywhere that you think is a huge lesson for the industry moving into 2022?
Yeah, that's a big one. I think for me personally, with the CFAB as a whole, and what we've understood is the being open to new technologies and adopting them. I think that's the biggest lesson to go forward. You know, we're going to have to try things, break a couple things along the way, but I think in the end, this is for the common good of how can we increase, you know, supply chain output and really get it ready for this industry 4.0 that everyone always likes to tote around, a smart manufacturing. This is kind of where it starts. It's that journey to there.
And it begins with just asking the folks who do it day in and out, hey, what is your pain point and how can we make it better? And I think that's just great advice for any executive anywhere in any industry. Dennis Delgado, thank you so much for your insights. Truly enjoyed this conversation. And, you know, here's crossing our fingers for a better global supply chain situation in the coming months.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me, Angie. I just appreciate the time. And yeah, look forward for the holidays. Hopefully the logistic woes weigh down a little bit.
Absolutely. And thank you everyone for joining us on this latest episode of Word on the Block. I'm Editor-in-Chief Angie Lau. Until the next time.